Afternoon.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
I'll get it. Give me your hand!
Edward, I know that we haven't spoken in a few years. I need your help.
I need your help.
I have a daughter. Her name is Rowan. She has been missing for 2 weeks now. I fear she is in danger, so now I turn to you. Be careful and believe nothing that you see or hear.
How's your bearings?
Hey, sorry. Snuck up on me there.
This is private property.
Do you know her?
I don't recognize this child.
Welcome. My little girl is still here. She has been taken by who I don't know.
I'll find her.
If she existed, we would know of her.
Whose desk is this,
Rowan? Hello?
You suspect foul play.
Hey! Wicker Man returns.
Who's the Wicker Man?
I'm gonna search every inch of this town.
She'll burn to death. She burned to death.
I need your help.
Daddy.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCrescio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good, good. I think today is a very important episode in the history of The Complete Works.
You are correct about that one, Mike, because we now enter the realm of one of the most infamous films in Nicolas Cage's filmography. This is a movie that anybody with even a passing familiarity with Nicolas Cage as an internet meme is familiar with. There's one scene in particular of this movie that has kind of defined Nicolas Cage in the minds of a lot of people. Today, we are discussing the 2006 remake of The Wicker Man. which we have informally stated that this is the third in Cage's The Something Man trilogy as well. I should throw that out there. First it was The Family Man, then there was The Weatherman, now finally there is The Wicker Man.
The Wicker Man.
Yes. Now, for some background, the original Wicker Man was a British horror film from 1973, directed by Robin Hardy, who didn't direct very many films before he died in July of last year, although he did write and direct a spiritual sequel called The Wicker Tree, which was released in 2011. So just a few years
ago. What?
Yeah.
I was not expecting that.
No, that was just a few years ago. Yeah, actually it had Christopher Lee in it as well. And Christopher Lee starred in the original film as Lord Summersisle, the antagonist of the movie. It's also starred Edward Woodward in the lead role as Sergeant Howie. Christopher Lee actually considered the original Wicker Man to be the best film he ever appeared in.
Holy shit.
He was a huge champion of the Wicker Man. And he even offered to pay the movie ticket prices for local critics to review it when it was released in Britain. That's how passionate he was about The Wicker Man. And when the original was first released, it mostly kind of slipped into obscurity. Its runtime was cut down by the studio, and it was released as a B-picture on a double bill with Don't Look Now, a thriller starring Donald Sutherland. And while there has been work done to restore the movie closer to Robin Hardy's original vision, the only existing copy of the original 99-minute cut of the film ended up in the hands of Roger Corman, of all people. And over the years, he lost the copy.
Son of a bitch.
So no one really knows where it is. But even as late as 2007, Christopher Lee said that he still believes it exists somewhere, probably in cans with no label on them. So nobody really knows exactly where the original cut of The Wicker Man is. But it is a film whose reputation has grown with time. And today, it's often considered one of the better horror films ever made. And in the 90s, Universal Pictures began their efforts to remake the movie in America. And that's how we got the film that we are talking about today, Mike.
Man, what a long and historied and pedigreed history for this film to end up with the one we get. preview of my review, I guess. Yeah, my thoughts.
So. Pretty much everybody's review of.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think anybody has any illusions about the Wicker Man remake. But what is kind of fascinating about The Wicker Man 2006 is that it's an incredibly different movie from the original, even though it is essentially doing the same thing. It hews so closely to the original, in fact, that 80% of the dialogue is word for word the same.
Wow.
Yeah. But there is one massive change this remake undergoes that changes the entire context of the film. Now, I watched the original just last month, so I am familiar with the change. And you had never seen the original, right?
Yeah. I had planned to watch it. I just never got time to watch the original one. That's so I am interested in your comparison.
Yeah. Well, so you do you know anything about the original, like what the change is that this remake does?
No.
Okay, so the original movie is much more a commentary on religion, and in this one, writer-director Neil LaBute takes the same concept and turns it into a commentary on gender. So every male role in the original Wicker Man is flipped into a female role, and every female role in the Wicker Man is also kept as a female role. So pretty much every character in this movie, in the remake, is a woman. Mm-hmm. And that's like his kind of twist on this concept.
Okay.
All right.
That's interesting.
Now, Neil LaBute, the writer and director of the movie, is a guy who has made a name for himself early on with his stylistic dialogue. He came onto the scene with 1997's In the Company of Men, starring Aaron Eckhart. And he's also done movies like Lakeview Terrace and the remake of Death at a Funeral from 2010. Most recently, he directed 2015's Dirty Weekend with Matthew Broderick and Alice Eve, and has done episodes of Billions and Van Helsing in the last year or so. Now, Nicolas Cage plays the lead character in this movie, renamed Edward Malice, whose last name is meant to be a combination of male and phallus.
Wow. That's like that's like the screenwriter of Batman vs. Superman realizing that both their moms are named Martha and thinking it's like a real big breakthrough moment.
Yep. Yeah, that is exactly what this is. That is the level that the Wicker Man is operating on. The level of Martha. The movie also stars iconic actress Ellen Burstyn from The Exorcist and Requiem for a Dream, taking on the Christopher Lee role as a Sister Summer's Isle. And Kate Behan plays a Sister Willow Woodward, Cage's former girlfriend who draws him to the island. Lily Sobieski from films like Deep Impact and Eyes Wide Shut plays Sister Honey. And Frances Conroy from 6 Feet Under, American Horror Story, and Barney's Mom from How I Met Your Mother plays Dr. T.H. Moss, the photographer of the island. And Molly Parker from Deadwood and House of Cards plays both Sister Rose and Sister Thorne. And then we've got a few cameo appearances in this movie, Mike. Some interesting ones. First off, and you may not have caught this one, because this one's really fast. Aaron Eckhart appears at the beginning of this movie as a truck stop patron.
Nope, missed him.
Okay. I believe he's wearing like a baseball cap. He's in the diner where Cage and his partner are the waitress goes up to another guy first and says, like, hey, do you want anything? He's like, oh, just the check or whatever, and he leaves. That's Aaron Eckhart.
Very nice.
So there's that. But then the ending of this movie features characters known as Bar Guy Number 1 and Bar Guy Number 2, who are played by none other than James Franco and Jason Ritter.
Wow.
So that's such a bizarre cameo appearance from those two actors. And of course, James Franco starred in the Nicolas Cage directed movie Sonny. So there is a reunion there as well.
There you go.
Yeah. So The Wicker Man was written and directed by Neil LaBute 3 years after his previous film, The Shape of Things, with Paul Rudd, and 2 years before his next film, Lakeview Terrace, with Samuel L. Jackson. This movie did not do what the studio was hoping to at the box office. On the budget of $40 million, it did not break even with $38.8 million, and it got thrashed critically, earning itself 5 Razzie nominations in the process for Worst Picture, Worst Actor for Nicolas Cage, Worst Screenplay, Worst Remake or Ripoff, and Worst On-Screen Couple for Cage and his bear suit. To its credit, it lost all of those awards to either Basic Instinct 2 or Little Man, the Marlon Wayans movie. If you went to the theater the weekend The Wicker Man came out, you may have also seen Crossover, a basketball movie starring Anthony Mackie, which currently holds a 2% of Rotten Tomatoes. Or you could have seen Jason Statham in the kick-ass action movie Crank, which came out on the same day.
Wow.
Or you may have been one of these six people who saw Mike Judge's Idiocracy in the theater.
You know, that's a really interesting film to also have come out on the same weekend, just in terms of like a study of cult film, I think, to have both of these movies come out in the same weekend.
Yeah.
Flicker Man and Idiocracy.
Yeah, and Crank too, which
Crank, yeah, that's true.
So that's actually a pretty wide variety of movies that have lived their own, like, all these movies are still known today. You know, Crossover, not so much. But The Wicker Man, Crank, and Idiocracy, like, people still hold these movies in some kind of esteem. In The Wicker Man, it's not great esteem.
but it is some type of esteem.
It is some type of esteem. It is sort of immortalized in a certain way, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a second. But the IMDb plot synopsis for The Wicker Man reads, a sheriff investigating the disappearance of a young girl from a small island discovers that there's a larger mystery to solve among the island's secretive neo-pagan community. Now, Mike, what are your overall thoughts on The Wicker Man?
What a loaded question. I'm not going to waste a whole lot of time, I don't think, because what is there left to say about The Wicker Man? it is so just poorly handled in every aspect, I think.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not every aspect, but a lot of them. Most aspects are just bad. It's trying to do this gender commentary plot while also doing this murder mystery thing, while also doing this slight commentary on religion, just in like a very basic overall sense. But it doesn't really manage to do any of those in any satisfactory or well-rounded or just capable. No one seems capable with any part of this movie. the kind of gender commentary, you know, an island of women that kind of reject and hate men and reject the real world, quote unquote, like, you know, the mainland.
Right.
But like, to know it, like, there's kind of really no point there. We get at some point we're given a history of why, something to do with the Puritans and the Pilgrims, I think, and the Revolution or some shit. I don't know. But it kind of goes nowhere and doesn't really serve to explain why we're sacrificing anyone ever.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, The Wicker Man is not a particularly good movie, and is probably best experienced as a 5-minute montage of its craziest bits on YouTube. I feel like that's the ideal way to watch The Wicker Man. And that's something that I've done in the past. Here's the thing. I don't think either of us had ever actually watched The Wicker Man in its entirety, right?
Yeah, no, I had never seen the actual movie.
Okay, yeah, but I had seen a lot of clips of it online, and I've seen, like, you know, online reviews of the movie. So I've seen, like, a good portion of the movie just out of context. And I feel like that is the ideal way to watch it, you know, because I think when you're actually watching it, I don't even think this is a, like, so bad it's good type of movie. It's kind of boring for most of it. Like, it's with very occasional absurd moments, which are fantastic in a so bad it's good kind of way, but are too infrequent for me to recommend watching the entire movie.
Yeah, there's the kind of cage freakouts for just the general insanity that's going on. But there is also an other 1 hour and 38 minutes of this movie that you have to suffer.
Yeah. The movie's an hour and 42 minutes long.
Exactly. Yeah.
I would say it kind of works when it's just Cage interrogating people on the island. Because most of those are scenes that are lifted just straight from the original. And there's a black comedy streak the movie is clearly going for, even if it plays it too straight to really land, I think. You know what I'm saying? But the original movie was essentially about a Catholic man looking for a missing girl amidst this religious cult, struggling and failing to understand their religion, which flies in the face of Catholicism. And so he's like calling them sinners and condemning them. But he's trying to find – he's, you know, going more and more insane as, like, this cult is, like, dealing with this kind of free love, kind of hippie society they've developed. And it's a lot more interesting than whatever this movie is doing with this. This one makes it so every major role on the island is a woman, and any men on the island are mute and subservient to them. And it seems like it's trying to make a point, right? Like, it seems like it's making a point at sort of, but it is also unclear about what point is being made.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some credit to be given to just the mere role reversal to serve as to expose the oh man, I can't excuse me, I can't think of words because it's we worked all day today, but to serve as a way to expose the treatment or representation of a certain gender, right? So you flip the male and female roles, but make the now male role presented and viewed the exact same way that the previously female role was, and it exposes the way females are portrayed, right, in a more clear sense, or you know, some kind of a way to make some kind of statement about it, but it doesn't really do anything with like, it doesn't go anywhere, it doesn't go a step further to address that, to kind of deal with that otherwise, because we're just presented with like you said, mute men who move stuff around. Which I guess, you know, it points out the way how women are usually mute and just pretty to look at, I guess, is enough. It could be enough in a better handled movie. But in this movie, it's just dumb.
And arguably, like, it's the movie's main thesis at the end. And, like, I'm reading into a ton of symbolism here. But the movie's thesis is essentially if women live together alone on an island, they would burn men to the ground, I guess. Is that like,
yeah.
And arguably that's a fairly misogynist viewpoint that this movie is going for. And it's just very weird. And it's very like, I don't really understand whatever point this movie is trying to make, but I feel like if whatever point it is trying to make, it's not a great one, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's definitely true. Like we're saying, it seems like it's attempting to make some kind of point, but it seems to also just undercut itself by making the women to be evil. So you kind of ruin the whole point there, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, so much of the original movie is based on the religious aspect of it, and I feel like that's partially here, but like it's doing the exact same thing, but applying it to this different thing with the gender thing, and it does not work nearly as well. Like it's the exact same movie, but with that like reversal. Like it's not about religion anymore, it's about gender. But the thing is, like, it's still like a ritual sacrifice type thing, so it's like intrinsically about religion.
Yeah, the whole plot hinges on a religious ceremony, so it's still about that.
Yeah, so it just doesn't work nearly as well as the original movie does. There's also the matter of the bees. Mike, we gotta talk about the bees.
Okay, we're gonna do it up front? Yeah. All
right. It's the reason that people know The Wicker Man, right? There's the infamous scene from The Wicker Man. It's the cagiest of the cage overacting scenes for a lot of people. I don't think it's his greatest overacting moment, but I think it's up there. The Not the Bees scene.
What is that? Oh, no, not the bees! Not the bees! Ah! Out of my eyes! My eyes! Ah! Ah!
You know, one of the biggest, you know, internet memes of all time, probably.
The birth of the one true God meme, I think.
Yeah, probably, right? If you think about it, I mean, The Wicker Man came out in 2006, and YouTube became a thing in 2005. So, like, it was like a perfect storm of things happening at once, where, like, YouTube was just blowing up, The Wicker Man had just come out, people were sharing this clip over and over again. Here's the thing about the Not the Beast scene. That we both discovered as we were watching The Wicker Man, it's not in the movie.
Imagine our dismay.
The credits started rolling, and I was like, wait a minute.
Oh, maybe it's a post-credits scene. Hold on.
The Not the Beast scene is not in the theatrical cut of The Wicker Man, which is the version that we both watched. It was instead included in the unrated version that hit DVD later that year.
Man, if only we had known.
If only, yeah. I mean, I think I had heard that, but I was like, it's probably not true. Because it's like, it's the most famous scene in the movie. How could it not be in the theatrical cut? But I think that arguably makes that scene that much more impressive. That it's the thing people think about when they think of The Wicker Man. And it makes the theatrical cut lamer because the movie is clearly leading up to that scene for its entire runtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is definitely that is the climax of this movie, and it's not in it.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. Like, you're watching the movie, and it makes special, like, bees feature prominently throughout the film. There is a lot of bees in The Wicker Man. There are scenes of Nicolas Cage running through a field that is just filled with beehives. He makes a point to note that he is allergic to bees, so that we know later on, oh man, I hope no bees attack Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, that'd be a real shame if they poured bees on him.
And you know, there's like scenes, others, like, you know, they're the whole thing about the island is that they make honey from the bees. That's how they make their money or whatever. And you know, there's a scene where he's like running through and kicking down doors. And one time he kicks down a door and there's a naked woman covered with bees. And it's like, what? And it's clearly like building up. It is building up to the bees, and the bee scene, the not the bees scene, is not in the actual cut of the movie.
I also love how that just completely destroys the continuity of the final scene, where he is, you know, they capture him, I guess spoilers for Wicker Man, but they capture him, right? They talk about, they exposition us, or they exposit to the audience about what's about to happen.
Right.
And then there's like this kind of weird like pan to the distance while there's this voiceover of Cage screaming and yelling about his legs or some shit. I don't know what he's doing. And then we cut to like the sacrifice where he's like put in the Wicker Man and he's about to be burned and he's just covered in bee stings.
Yeah.
And like, and out of nowhere, it doesn't make any sense. They just never address it in the theatrical cut, at least. Yeah. It makes it stand out even more that scene's not in the film.
Yeah, it is weird. Now, did you rewatch that scene after you watched The Wicker Man out of curiosity?
No, I should have. I felt like I had seen it enough that I was just like,
I'm sure you have. I have been rewatching it. It's like 20 seconds long.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know, they pour the bees on. I think what's interesting about that scene compared to the rest of the movie is that I think Cage is actually like kind of underplaying it for most of this movie.
Until a certain point. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. So I was wondering why they would have cut the Not the Beast scene. I think for most of the movie, Cage is like kind of underplaying it. There are moments where he like kind of bursts out and, you know, some ridiculous shit goes down. But for the most part, I think it's kind of underplaying it. And then when the Not the Beast scene happens, he ratchets up to like 11 for that 20 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, where he's just like, not the bees. They're in my eyes. Also, best thing about that scene is that he shouts, "They're in my eyes," when they are nowhere near his eyes.
My favorite part about that scene is that it's very clearly like CG bees, obviously. and not even that, but it's the fact that Cage is narrating what the bees are doing because they're not actually there. So that's why he yells, "They're in my eyes," to me.
Yes. Like, no, you're right.
You can clearly, like, you can just imagine the director just off camera going, "And now the bees are in your eyes." And he yells, they're in my eyes.
No, like, you weren't supposed to say that.
Yeah, that's like my favorite thing about that scene.
But then what makes that even better is that they didn't animate the bees in his eyes when he shouted, "They're in my eyes."
Yeah, it's great.
The bees are literally everywhere else on Cage. They're not in his eyes when he shouts that. It's pretty great. If you haven't seen the Not the Bees scene, which if you like, why are you listening to this podcast? Do yourself a favor and go look it up on YouTube. It's 20 seconds long. It's well worth your time. Worth your time than the actual cut. More than the let's say the entirety of The Wicker Man, because Not the Bees is not in the actual movie. The Wicker Man. But it is so bizarre that scene is not in this movie. Now we're talking a little bit about Nicolas Cage's performance. What did you think of Nicolas Cage in The Wicker Man, Mike?
Oh man, I think this I do agree with you that that Cage is sort of kind of playing it straight. Underplaying a lot of stuff that's going on. It's, you know, as the tension and stakes increase throughout the film, towards the, you know, probably the last 20 minutes, last half hour or so, the last act, where he kind of ratchets up and the insanity or the inhabitants of the island have effectively driven him insane. You know, this whole plot is unraveled and it just becomes a literal montage of him kicking in doors and punching women. which is like the best. If you want to watch this movie, watch the Cage punching women supercut. It's hilarious. But I think for the most part, he's kind of doing his, I don't want to say his best, but with what he's given, right? So much of this movie, so much of the dialogue in this movie is so banal and just pointless. But there are scenes. I think it is like you said, when he's whenever he's interrogating someone about what's going on the island, it is kind of interesting, even if it's the most ridiculous words anyone has ever said on film. I mean, the other standout scene to me, besides the not the bees, is the how did it get burned scene.
Sure, that's another huge internet meme.
That's scene. The other meme.
This hers? Tell me!
I think it's... Yeah.
How did it get burned? How did it get burned? How did it get burned? How did it get burned?
I don't know!
So, but we could watch those two scenes and then the punching women supercut, and you got the whole movie. to preempt, I'll wait till I hear your thoughts before I go into how I think this relates to his other work.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to throw out my hot take for the day.
Okay.
I actually don't think Cage is that bad in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, he's kind of just he's kind of boring, I think.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I feel like, you know, he's doing a fine job with what he's given. He's kind of like I said, he's kind of underplaying the role for the most hour, and then once things start to ratchet up to, you know, craziness, the tension starts building towards the end. That's when he starts ratcheting up as well, and you see that in his performance. There's the how to get burned. There's the not the bees, even though it's not in the movie. There's you know, the montage of him kicking down doors, which is phenomenal. I don't think I'd ever seen a kicking down doors thing actually, and it was amazing.
Yeah,
because it's literally just him. Like he's. I think my favorite part of that montage actually is him going to different kids on the island and knocking their masks off.
Yeah, yeah. Like he's just a person that has completely given up on everything.
Yeah. it's pretty great to watch. And he, you know, he has a couple of like weird line readings, but I also feel like that stuff kind of fits the tone of the movie as it is, you know, at that point in time. So in the context of the movie, it's not that weird. When you're watching out of context clips on YouTube, it's hilarious.
Yeah, but it does. You're right. The tension and just everything has escalated to the point that seems to be his only recourse, is to just fuck this. I'm kicking down doors and punching everybody.
Yeah.
And he does it.
He does it. He goes hard. It's a lot of fun. So, Mike, how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play in other movies?
I think that this is a very interesting moment in Cage's career, especially for the podcast going forward. For I think a lot of people, this marks the demise of Nicolas Cage. This is the first movie. I mean, we still have a long way to go before we get to kind of what he is in the last, you know, 3-4 years.
Like DVD kind of Cage.
Yeah, but I think this is the kind of beginning of the first stumble. In a long series of stumbles before we get to direct-to-DVD Cage.
I could see that. I mean, I think this movie kind of represents the point where Cage becomes an internet meme.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's part of it. And so I think Cage is primed for a comeback, by the way. He's been he's in a couple of upcoming movies that I've heard really great things about. But I think this is kind of the point where people are like, okay, Not the Bees is hilarious. We're going to share that on YouTube a bunch of times. And then... Mm-hmm. That's when people started to look back, you know, YouTube was starting to become a thing. People started to look back at other stuff he's done, Vampire's Kiss, other like big performances. I'm sure Deadfall got passed around quite a bit. And, you know, there was other like wild Cage performances people saw. And that's the point where people are like, oh, shit, Nicolas Cage is insane. He's this.
Yeah.
That's the point where the image of the over the top actor Nicolas Cage came to be, even though he had always been that. Like he had always been doing that in pretty high profile movies like Face Off and stuff like that. You know, I feel like that this is the moment where Cage becomes Nicolas Cage in the sense of the internet.
Yeah. The ability to create a montage video of Nicolas Cage yelling crazy things and post it online and share it everywhere made the mental image of that's all he does be a thing. And I think The Wicker Man was the impetus for that image.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I think it definitely was. And otherwise, though, I mean, I feel like in terms of the kind of movies that we've seen Cage make in the past, I don't think we've really seen him do this kind of like psychological thriller before. That I can recall, at least maybe 8mm. Like I feel like that's the closest analogy to it.
That's pretty close.
Yeah, but he has done a few remakes. Of course, he did Kiss of Death, City of Angels, Gone in 60 Seconds, and he also played a detective at least one other time in Honeymoon in Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. No, I do think this is an interesting kind of foray into horror, or I don't really even want to classify this as a horror movie, but I guess it is an attempt at a horror movie in some way.
I think it is an attempt, because the original is decidedly a horror movie.
Yeah.
But this one, I don't know. It's like there are horror elements. I would classify it as more of a psychological thriller.
Yeah.
With horror elements, which I realize is splitting a lot of hairs, but...
but I think sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good.
I think you're right that though I think you're right. whatever that sentence is supposed to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That it is a there are horror elements going on, but I think that it's interesting to see Cage kind of get into some weird genre stuff. I don't know if we've particularly seen him. I mean, we have seen, like, you know, varying genres, but no kind of deep dive horror or anything like that, or sci-fi, really, you know, stuff like that.
Sure.
It's all kind of a drama or erotic thriller, drama or comedy. That's kind of it.
You're throwing out erotic thriller for Zandali? Is that what? Yeah.
He's been in a bunch of those.
Name me one erotic thriller besides Zandali that I'm forgetting about.
I would count Kiss of Death. No, not Kiss
that's
of Death.
That's not an erotic thriller.
No, I lost it. Red Rock West, even though that's not exactly that.
That's not an erotic thriller either. You're losing me, man. You just lost this podcast.
Look, we've done a lot of movies, a lot of Cage having sex.
Yeah, fair. All right, Mike.
Firebirds. Oh, no, wait.
You know what? I'll count Firebirds.
All right.
I remember the egregious sex scene of Firebirds pretty well. with the Phil Collins songs overlaying.
Yeah. That's right. Oh, man.
Man. All right. So, Mike, we're talking about The Wicker Man, not Firebirds today. Are there any moments or scenes in The Wicker Man that stood out to you? I mean, there are obviously the famous ones. We talked about Not the Bees. We talked about How to Get Burned. And I have seen this on the internet countless times. But the image of Nicolas Cage punching a woman in the face in a bear costume still makes me laugh so fucking hard.
Yeah, that was the scene that I was most interested to have context for.
And you're still confused.
Yeah, and still, just that, like, weird kind of swagger run that he does as he approaches.
I think that's the best part of that scene, is because it's the same shot of Nicolas Cage just running up towards her in a bear costume, mind you. Mm-hmm. And it takes like a good 10 seconds, right? Like, it's just him like running. And then he just, as soon as, like, I think she's mid sentence, right? She's like talking to him. And,
yeah, well, she thinks he's the person that he stole the costume from.
Right. And he just like runs up to her, socks her in the face, and runs away. And it's the best thing of all time. It is absurd. It is ridiculous. It's people point to Not the Bees as the scene of The Wicker Man. This is the scene of The Wicker Man.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just bananas. And I don't know for sure if it was actually Nicolas Cage in the bear costume, because it's a full body costume.
But yeah.
I would like to believe that it is. You know?
I think it probably was.
It probably was, but you never know. It could have been a stunt double or something. I'm hoping it was actually Nicolas Cage. So that is insane. And that's something I've seen the internet, you know, poke fun at hundreds of times. That's another one of the big meme scenes in The Wicker Man. I remember the Nostalgia Critic did a review of The Wicker Man many years ago and just had like a list of bear jokes that came that he played alongside the the bear punching scene. It was pretty wild.
Waka waka whore. Papa Bear says this bitch is too conscious. Bernstein family says hi. Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Winnie the shut the fuck up. The bear necessities would like you to get more acquainted with the ground. Gummy bears bouncing here and there and in your face. Sister Rose, meet Brother Bear. I hear you've been harnessing picnic baskets. Paddington told me we should meet face to face. Can't get enough of that golden crisp. It's got the crunch with punch.
And the number one Nicolas Cage bear joke is...
only you can prevent not getting your ass kicked by Nicolas fucking Cage!
And then the movie ends with Nicolas Cage just, like, punching and kicking a whole lot of women in the face. And it's still pretty insane. That's right before the Not the Bees, or where Not the Bees is supposed to be, in the theatrical cut of the movie. And again, it is weird when Not the Bees isn't there, because the movie, just you hear Cage screaming, And there's just kind of a transition into Cage being led into the Wicker Man. And you just hear Cage's screams during the torture scene. I think you even hear him say, not the bees and stuff like that, but you don't actually see the bees.
He yells something about his legs, I remember, because it was such an oddly specific thing to yell.
He shouts, "my leg," as if he's the background character in a SpongeBob cartoon.
The guy SpongeBob. I wonder if that was the end. We have to. Well, probably not.
I'm pretty sure
when did SpongeBob come out?
I'm pretty sure the SpongeBob guy came first.
All right. Yeah.
Maybe Cage was giving that guy a shout out. I don't know.
Who knows?
But yeah, there is some bizarre stuff happening there. And yeah, he gets tortured, gets led into the Wicker Man. It burns down. And then in the unrated cut of the movie, it cuts to black right there. It cuts to credits right there. In the theatrical cut, it cuts 6 months later. And that's where you have James Franco and Jason Ritter showing up.
Yeah, that scene was real weird, as if we didn't already understand what had happened to Cage or what the people on this island do. We have to, like, in the most, like, kind of early 2000s horror movie way, like, we have to have the epilogue that, like, could possibly set up a sequel.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's supposed to show that it's all coming full circle, sort of, that it's all starting all over again. The process is happening again. But with James Franco's character, I guess, and maybe Jason Ritter's character, but it seemed more explicitly James Franco's. But, you know, how much money would you pay to watch a Wicker Man 2 starring James Franco? Because I would pay a lot.
I mean, with Franco now, I'm in.
The Franco who's playing Tommy Wiseau in The Disaster Artist, like, that's the Franco I want.
Yes.
In the Wicker Man 2, yeah. I mean, yeah, it is an odd scene. It's just weird that it's James Franco and Jason Ritter. Like, it's such a unglamorized cameo, you know what I mean? It just is them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like they just followed them at a bar in Hollywood somewhere. Like, and they happened to find Lily Sobieski, or whatever the hell her last name is.
Or it was like, you ever seen Bowfinger, where they're making it, like, where it's like Steve Martin pretending to make, like, tricking James Franco into being in a movie? I feel like that is what's going on. Like, they got the actress from The Wicker Man, they got the crew, and James Franco was hanging out at a bar, and they were like, okay, go, now!
It's the best.
Yeah, that is probably exactly what happened. And I think it is perhaps the ultimate Cage ending, because this movie ends with the increasing sound of bees over that scene with James Franco and Jason Ritter, and the sound of Nicolas Cage screaming before cutting to black. Just a loud Cage scream, and then it cuts to credits. And I think that's the ultimate way to end a Nicolas Cage horror movie.
Yeah, I think that's really the only appropriate way to end The Wicker Man. You're right.
Absolutely. Now, Mike, are there other scenes that stood out to you, Mike? I mean, there are a ton of scenes in The Wicker Man that are just absurd in their weirdness.
I did particularly enjoy the absolute garbageness of the scene where Cage needs to go use the seaplane's radio, so he runs out on the dock and he kind of looks down and he sees Rowan through the grate in the dock, like, underwater.
Yes.
So he dives under and grabs her, and then I don't remember why he wakes up on the dock the first time.
Right.
But he wakes up on the dock holding her and dead in his arms, and then he wakes up again. It's so fucking dumb.
It is double daydream Cage. Yeah. So he goes down. Yeah. He, like, is trying to save Rowan, and then, like, he blacks out for some reason, and he wakes up, and it's like this, like, shot. The way it's shot when he's waking up too, it's like this very sudden, like, like, he's, like, gasping as he wakes up. It's like this kind of shock moment, and he, like, looks down and he sees Rowan in his arms, like, no, and then he wakes up again. It's the exact same shot of him waking up and gasping, but Rowan's not like there anymore.
It's the scene of Sir Lancelot in Monty Python running to the castle. It's the exact same shot. It's used back to back.
It is bizarre. And yeah, I mean, other scenes. I mean, I think Cage's, now we're talking about Cage's, like, dreams and visions and stuff in the movie, they are all hilarious in their own way. I mean, so the beginning of this movie with Cage pulling over the mom and her daughter, with the daughter throwing the doll out the window. It's going to sound terrible, but the mom and daughter get hit by a truck, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, it's clearly meant to be very emotional, and it's kind of the basis for the whole movie, right?
Yeah, it's the first 2 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, and I just mean, like, the psychological trauma that his character goes through. Like, you know, it's supposed to be, like, the whole emotional foundation for what we think about his character. And it's just, like, the stupidest thing.
It's so dumb. A, I mean, you're going to pull over a mom and her daughter because a doll fell out of the car. That doesn't seem like super cop thing to do. Like, it doesn't seem like there's got to be better things to do with your time. But
he's just a good guy, Mike. Sure, that's all.
Sure, that's fine. I did.
He's
like
a male phallus. What's he gonna do?
I did like that he picked up the doll without stopping on his motorcycle. He just like picks it up, like at like 60 miles an hour. He just like leans down and picks up the doll on the road. That was pretty great. But anyway, yeah. So he pulls them over, and the doll, the girl throws the doll back out the window because she's troubled or something. And and he like walks over to the other side of the street to pick up the doll. And then when he does that, a truck just comes careening by from off screen and just obliterates the car that the mom and the daughter are in. Which is amazing, because at no point does anybody see the truck. At no point does anybody hear the truck coming. It just shows up off screen. It's like at the end of Jurassic Park when the T-Rex shows up out of nowhere. It's, but it's a truck that destroys their lives. and it's just so weird and bizarre. And then throughout the movie, Cage is having these like psychological trauma things. I mean, he's seeing a little girl getting hit by trucks over and over again.
When you say it that way, oh my god.
And he'll just be like looking, he'll just be like daydreaming, and he'll see a girl, and then suddenly random off screen truck, and it's like whoa. It's really funny.
Totally undercuts the whole impact of the movie.
Yeah, it is pretty funny. Not that there's like a ton of impact that the movie had going into
But that's true.
Yeah, that was pretty great. Otherwise, other scenes throughout the movie, I did like Cage interrogating the children in the schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm. That was another standout scene, I think, too. Yeah,
partially because when he comes in, the teacher is talking to the girls in the school about like what represents men or whatever, and the two creepy like twin girls like stand up and go phallic symbol, phallic symbol.
Yeah, it's yeah,
and it's like, all right, I guess that's supposed to mean something, but whatever.
Moving on.
And yeah, the movie actually doubles down on the creepy twins aspect of the movie, because there's a pair of young girl twins, and then there's a pair of old women twin that terrorize Cage at some point throughout the movie too. I feel like you're blank on that. Like,
I got it. It's just another one of those like weird horror movie tropes that like are kind of here in this movie, but not really doing anything other than being there.
Yes, and also has the. That schoolyard scene also has the bird coming out of the desk, which is pretty great too. Just very weird stuff. Otherwise, other Wicker Man things, Mike, do you have any other standout scenes that you want to talk about? Any other performances that stood out to you? Ellen Burstyn, perhaps?
Not particularly. I mean, there is stuff, Sister Summer's Isle, or like that whole like weird house thing that she's the representative of the avatar of Mother Earth or whatever the fuck on the island. Like that whole thought, like it's the weird part of the movie that's about religion, even though the movie's not about religion. That stuff is interesting, I guess. Like it kind of delves into some, or could delve into some interesting stuff, but at this point, it's basically the scene before the door kicking montage, and then it's kind of that takes away all the attention. and that scene when he is kicking in the door, or when he's in Sister Summer's Isle's house kicking indoors, and we do get that like naked girl covered in bees, and like that weird, we go into like this very odd place. I can't remember anything else that stands out in that scene in particular, but just we go to what felt like a Twin Peaks kind of thing, where it's just like, yeah, we're gonna just flash weird visual things to you as Cage kicks indoors. Nowhere near the coherence or just interestingness that is Twin Peaks.
Right.
Yeah, but it tries to do a weird thing, and that's kind of cool, I guess.
I guess, yeah. I mean, it's just so much of this movie. I feel like there's enough like decent a half decent ideas throughout this movie.
Yes,
and none of it is executed particularly well. And yeah, as for the other performances, I mean, I think Cage is like fine in the movie, and everyone else is like fine. Like, I don't think anybody is like terrible. But it's just very dry, I guess, and there's not much added to the dryness, so to speak.
Yeah.
So like Ellen Burstyn is fine, and like Molly Parker, I was kind of excited to see, because I recognized her from Deadwood, and I was like, hey, it's Molly Parker. But yeah, otherwise, I mean, it's just weird. And then there's the odd cameos with Chase Franco and Jason Ritter, which are like, why are you guys here? This is odd.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So unless there's any other scenes that you wanted to bring up, Mike, I feel like we can move on to Netflix reviews.
No, I am also interested to know what the Netflix reviews for this are.
All right,
I'm nervous a little bit.
All right, so I've got a few of them here. Here's a one-star review of The Wicker Man from Netflix. I've never done a review before, but like others, I feel the need to make the world a better place. If this stops just one person from wasting a rental and their time, I will feel vindicated for the waste of the above I experienced. The movie's plot has more dead ends than a corn maze, and I felt like I was trapped on an island of stupidity. Why? And he goes on to list all the questions that he had in this movie. Why did Mr. Cage's character feel the need to wear a shirt, tie, and sports coat while wandering all over the island on foot and on vacation?
Yep, that's true.
And how was the shirt always clean, white, and dry, even though he was constantly jumping into filthy water all over the place? Which is a fair point.
That's good.
And how did he have police jurisdiction on a private island in a different state from where he worked? That is actually addressed in the movie, so I'm going to discount that question. And why did he continuously take drugs even though something appeared to be giving him illusions? And how did he ever expect to get any cooperation out of these weird people by bullying them with nothing to back it up but a weak Barney Fife caricature? Very sad, Nikki. Ellen Burstyn did a good job as the queen bee of the hive, but the rest of the acting was vacuous at best. The title of this movie should have been The She-Women, Man, and Logic Haters Club. I guess that'll do it. BTW, I didn't like the movie.
Yeah, I get the feeling that this is going to be most of them.
Just like, why is this movie? What is going on?
But why? Yeah, that's pretty much.
Here's another one-star review of The Wicker Man. This is an interesting one. Michael Wiseman belongs to the cult Scientology, which is a horrible cult that destroys people's lives and tears families apart. I will never see another Michael Wiseman movie or TV show as long as he is a member or participant of this cult. I will not let another dime of my hard-earned money support a cult like Scientology. I should point out cult is always in all caps.
Perfect.
And that goes for all the other actors that belong to the cult Scientology. You can find a list of these actors on the internet. I do applaud Leah Remini and Jason Biggs, as well as others, for getting the guts to not only leave Scientology, but expose it for the cult that it is. Now, Michael Wiseman is Nicolas Cage's partner in the movie, who is in, like, one scene.
Okay. dude right at the very beginning?
Yeah, the police officer cop. I think he's in the diner scene with him, and then he shows up when Nick Cage like says, oh, I'm going to the island or whatever.
Right.
This guy is in less than 2 minutes of this movie. So if you're looking for Michael Wiseman movies to boycott, you might want to look elsewhere because he's barely in this. And there are other reasons for you to boycott The Wicker Man. Anyway, here's another one-star review of The Wicker Man. I didn't know if I should give this 1 star for being so bad or 5 stars for being so bad. It was hilarious. Nicolas Cage acts like he had never ridden a bicycle before. Most of the movie was mind-numbingly bad. The bear costume just put everything over the top. And he makes a good point about the bicycle thing. There's a scene in the movie where Nicolas Cage steals a woman's bicycle, and he just rides it very oddly, right? Like,
yeah. Also, he steals it at gunpoint. That's the best part.
That is true too. Yeah. Here's a 3-star review of The Wicker Man. Beware random trucks running down girls on ferries. That is all caps.
That's it?
There's a little more.
Oh.
My God, this film was so awful, it was good. Comedy gold, hence the 3 stars. Watch it for a laugh. Expect cheap jump scares and Nicolas Cage punching a lady in the face while in a bear suit. Pure gold.
Yeah, I wish I had that opinion of this one. We talked about it, that I feel like it just is bad. It doesn't cross that that bridge to being great.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think, yeah, there is like about 5 minutes worth of really funny scenes in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not really worth the hour and a half surrounding it. So definitely check out the YouTube clips because those are hilarious.
Uh-huh.
If you haven't seen it.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I got a 5-star review of The Wicker Man here. The world's best inadvertently accidental comedy, all caps, a classic for all the wrong reasons. Highlights include Nicolas Cage running away from a swarm of bees and then falling down a hill, which is hilarious, so he's right about that. Nicolas Cage stealing a bicycle. Nicolas Cage running around the island, kicking down doors, looking for the missing girl. Ellen Burstyn dancing around in a muumuu. Nicolas Cage screaming, "How to get burned!" and, "Oh God, not the bees!" Nicolas Cage in a bear costume, running through the woods, taking off the costume, but leaving the bare feet on. And then punching women in the face. If you're not entirely convinced that this movie's hilarious, perhaps try The Wicker Man drinking game. And that is probably the best way to watch this movie, if you are drinking alongside it. Because I would imagine it is a lot more hilarious if you are hammered. Finally, I have one last one. It's a 5-star review of The Wicker Man, and it's really the only review you actually need of The Wicker Man. "Oh no, not the bees, not the bees. Oh no, they're in my eyes, my eyes."
Go on.
That's it. That's the review. That's the...
Oh, Netflix.
Yeah, so that is the Netflix reviews for The Wicker Man. And I guess that wraps up our discussion, Mike, about The Wicker Man. Unless you have any last-minute scenes or clips that you want to throw out there, if you want to just quote one random scene. You just want
I haven't had any revelations about The Wicker Man since we started recording. So I think... We have joined the chorus of people that have expressed their thoughts on The Wicker Man.
I suppose we have. So, yeah, it's not a particularly good film. If you could watch the original Wicker Man from 1973, that's a pretty good movie. It's also, like, kind of musical, which is weird. But it's worth checking out. But it's worth checking out. It's really good. So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Plus, you can find my work at crookedmarquee.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That is Mike DiCriccio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. You can help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Now, any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. You can list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us in 2 weeks for another episode of Complete Works, in which Nicolas Cage will fulfill his lifetime dream of playing a superhero. Mike, we are taking on Ghost Rider, baby.
It's happening.
It is finally happening. I have not seen the original Ghost Rider in a very, very long time. Probably since it was in theaters, now that I'm thinking about it. But I will tell you this. 13-year-old Mike really liked Ghost Rider.
Wow. All right.
Now, have you seen Ghost Rider? I'm assuming you have.
I have seen it, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's been a long time, though. Same situation.
It's been a while. Since I've seen Ghost Rider today.
Wow.
Yeah, I needed to. I forgot to do Can't Find a Wicker Man at the beginning of this. So I figured I'd go with the Pearl Jam ripoff band for Ghost Rider. Plus, as a bonus, I figured we'll do this in our Ghost Rider episode as well. We'll discuss Nicolas Cage's role in one of the fake film trailers from Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez's Grindhouse. He was in Rob Zombie's Werewolf Women of the SS. And I figured that's not really worthy of a full episode. But I figure we can talk for 5 or 10 minutes about that as well.
Yeah, because it's a 2-minute fake trailer.
Exactly. So. And I don't really need another excuse to rewatch Grindhouse, but it feels like we'd be watching 2 full movies and what would we talk about? We would be talking about completely unrelated things to the Nicolas Cage thing. So we want to keep this podcast on track. So we will talk about Werewolf Women of the SS in addition to Ghost Rider in the next episode of Complete Works. Plus, you can keep an eye on Film Bookcast, where hopefully we're talking about Blade Runner 2049 if we can get that going, scheduling things work out. Otherwise, it's pretty much dormant until Thor Ragnarok comes out, I think.
So we'll figure something out.
Yeah, but we're working on getting Blade Runner 2049 out to the good people of podcast land. So thanks so much for listening, guys. I'll play one of the songs in the original Wicker Man to take us out today. And thanks so much for getting in the cage.
In the woods there grew a tree, and a fine, fine tree was he.
And on that tree there was a limb, and on that limb there was a branch, and on that branch there was a nest, and in that nest there was an egg, and in that egg there was a bird, and from that bird a feather came, and of that feather was a bird. And on that bed there was a girl, and on that girl there was a man, and from that man there was a seed, and from that seed there was a boy, and from that boy there was a man, and from that man there was a grave, and from that grave there grew a tree.